Oh, welcome into a daily editorial here on the KE Report. Happy to report that I am chatting with Rick Ackerman, founder and editor of, well, Rick's Picks, which I will add a link below this interview. Rick, I first just want to chat with you about the overall metals market. I know you cover the metals quite extensively for your subscribers because you do have a lot of subscribers that are constantly either looking at stocks or just looking at the sector in general. But you and I were chatting off mic about the situation that the metals have been in, the situation of sideways movement without a breakout to the upside or to the downside. You can argue for about 5 to 6 years now. What's your general takeaway from a market that just hasn't been moving?
Well, taking a step back, Corey, I'm bullish, but you know, as you're talking about 6 years there of sideways, and the question is, how bullish can you be, and how patient can you be? Gold is certainly testing the patience of bulls to the utmost, and you look at charts and. The good news is that, the bad news is that gold just never can get out of its own way. It starts to look good, and then it just lets you down. And the good news, as good as it gets, I guess, is that the bears are pretty feeble, too. So I never did buy into that gold's going to dip below 1,000 before it takes off. But it can sure frustrate you and go nowhere without dipping below 1,000.
And that's kind of the scenario I think that we're in right now, is that if you can pick the select stocks that somehow go on a run, then you can still do well in this environment. But quite frankly, if you're just buying and holding a wide range of stocks, it's still a tough game to be playing. Let's look at the gold technicals, though, because gold earlier today dropped down to just short of about 1280. It was about 1281 and change and rebounded. But again, we're sitting at about 1288 as you and I are talking. Not very exciting, plus kind of down at the bottom part of this recent short-term trading range. Any changes in your technicals, Rick? Please just share some levels that you continue to watch.
Well, I've been using a 1262 target on the COMEX June. It's currently 1290, so it's about 28 bucks above my downside target. And gold's got me so rattled that the rally that we had last week to around 1314 was, by my reckoning, a perfect mechanical short. It's a type of trade we do using my hidden pivot system. And I'm not going to go into the proprietary details, but here I am looking at an absolute perfect short. Perfect in a way, I've got a couple other trades on in wheat and the Canadian dollar, and it's an agony. You wait for weeks before the thing does what you want it to do. But in gold, we had this rally right up to what I call the green line, and you didn't even have to wait a day. It collapsed, and it would have been a beautiful trade. So off that pattern specifically, I'm looking for 1262.30. And I think that'll be, if you're just dying to jump on gold and you're always looking for the most opportune places to at least test the water, I would suggest 1262.30 on that June contract. And when I say precise, I would try it myself with a 1260.40 or 50 bid with a stop loss just below at 1260.190. So I'd be risking no more than maybe half a buck, 50, 60 cents on that June contract, and I would want to take some partial profits on a rally of as little as $4 or $5, because we all know what happens eventually. You wait for this big rally to materialize in gold, and it just doesn't happen. But that's a good place to get in with relatively little risk.
Okay, but what about your overall take then? If gold does drop down to, let's say, 1260 or right around that level, it would be then breaking a short-term low that it put in just about a month ago at about 1280. So is that a concern in the longer-term sense that we weren't able to hold that short-term low?
No, I mean, we've already broken below the early March lows in that 1285 range, so it's not like they're sacred. And you know, I don't really see the next significant low on the daily chart for that June unbroken is, it's way down there. It's Well, I say way down there. It's 1249. So, and even then, the major low comes from last August at around 1289, and that's the biggie. I don't see taking that out, but gold could pulverize you in the meantime.
So you're talking about that August low down at, well, on the spot market, 1167 too. So still a long way down to that. But how do you think the U.S. dollar is also impacting the precious metals market here? U.S. dollar, it's not breaking down, it's not breaking up, but it is holding, again, at kind of the higher part of this trading range.
Yeah, the dollar has been in just a very, very slight waft higher, but essentially in what looks to be a consolidation since, I think it could go back to last September. So it's moving higher, and there is something interesting there from my standpoint, and that is the whole, let's call it a consolidation, going back to August of 2018. A lot of chop up and down the dollar index in a range of around 96 or 97 down to 94 and change. So, but that whole, all that chop that's taken place over most of the last year or so has been beneath the key high that was made in June of 2017. So in that respect, you could argue that it's really that the dollar has been in a distribution. And if you go to the weekly chart, it too does not look that promising. But on the other hand, there's nothing that argues that it's going to break down really badly. So I would say, you know, even looking out a year or two, unless gold breaks seriously one way or the other, it's not going to have much impact on gold. But I also think that and this goes kind of against the consensus, but I think that we could have strong gold and strong dollar at the same time, but only if the things that were driving the dollar higher were kind of crisis related, in my view, related to things that are signaling deflation.
Okay. Hey, you're not alone in thinking that the two could go up together, the U.S. dollar and gold, and that would or could be very much kind of that safety play if a lot goes wrong for the overall markets and economies around the world. But you know what? There is an argument that I think can be made for, again, a sideways trending dollar for a while longer and a sideways trending metal price for a while longer, and trying to reallocate maybe where some of the funds have been going. And a lot of where the funds have been going, again, is into the broad markets and even into some of those high-flying tech names. You have a recent narrative out there that talks about so-called dead stocks walking. These aren't dead stocks in the sense that they're not making money, but they, you think, are dead stocks in the sense that they're changing their business plans and not going to see anywhere near the growth or profitability they had before. Can you share some of these ideas, please?
Well, I think it's really striking that you have some heavy hitter stocks, Boeing for one, Apple for another, Facebook, and there's all real risk. There's risk there. And yet, even with the riskiest of the bunch, Tesla, you see that Tesla, no matter how bad the news, it might drop for a bit, but then it goes into a holding pattern that is always looks like accumulation. So it seems like no matter what the news on Tesla, there's always institutional buying in the stock. But it's worse than that in Apple and Facebook. Apple, we all know that iPhone sales, which is where most of the company's revenues come from, are weakening not only in the U.S., but in their second biggest market, China, and that competition from cell phone makers, they can make phones that are just about the equivalent of the iPhone and sell them for half the price. And you get a couple things like that happening, a little more competition, and people, a lot of iPhone cult users thinking, well, I'll hold my phone, hold on to it for another year or so. And it produces a serious slowdown. So, all right, so Apple's thinking, well, what can we do next? And what Apple came up with as the next big thing was such an utter disappointment that they said, well, we're gonna jump into streaming content. And of course, you've already got so many big players in there. And it's not like even if you should luck out and come up with enough talent to produce shows that people will watch in preference to Netflix or Disney shows or whoever, you're still not going to make as much money from that as you do selling iPhones. And that, and it's a big if as to whether even as big a player as Apple, with as huge an install base as it has, can make inroads. It's not a given that they're going to produce great content on a par with Netflix. And even Netflix has its problem because it's what it's paying now for talent to develop these shows. They're more good shows than anybody can watch. And I think that's going to be a problem for not just Netflix, but for all the producers and distributors of content. So, and when you look at Facebook, same thing. Zuckerberg knows that all the regulators in every country in the world are gunning for him, and that the company is really a pariah with respect to, if you care about privacy, you hate Facebook. And we also know that the millennials, who are sort of core users for Facebook, are drifting away from it, meaning that Facebook is, at this point, even as we speak, it's becoming uncool. And you can become very uncool very quickly, as you may recall from the experience of America Online. And I don't think Facebook is immune to that, even if it's got 2 billion subscribers. It can be a has-been. And so Zuckerberg sees those things. And his next big thing, he announces that they want to move away from an advertising-based model, less reliant on advertising, and go into fee-for-service that would involve small group interactions, encrypted messaging, and stuff like that. And again, just like Apple, he's looking at a business that won't have anywhere near the profit margins that he's been getting from the laser targeted advertising. So that has not stopped Wall Street, all these whack job investors, from bidding the stocks up. And it's just based on an entirely different it's based on a whole new game. So it just tells you that when the market's in a mood to go higher, it doesn't matter what the news is, these stocks just go on a rampage.
That is very true. And you know what? I do share some of those concerns about the different sectors that some of these companies are trying to get into. But looking at some of the other FANG stocks, I know you are still, or you were, a fan of Amazon. Maybe a quick update there. Also, Google. Do you have any faith in those two compared to the high-flying names?
Well, it's interesting you should mention those two, because I cannot kind of blanket the FANG stocks with this criticism that you got to be nuts to be buying them at these levels. Amazon and Google are a little bit different. Google still has its problems because it makes so much money on the internet. There's this idea that they've got such power over search engines, and the regulators would like to go at Google too. But Google has got its hands into so many things that could pay off. And, even Amazon, you think of Amazon as giant retailer, but they're also, their web-based services business is huge. It's just enormous.
It's their main moneymaker.
Yeah, and it's just growing. It's a kind of business that's so big that one player could conceivably extract the better part of $1 trillion from that market, and there'd still be plenty of undeveloped market for everybody else to get into. It's a huge growth market, so it's hard to put the knock on Amazon. I love to put the knock on any stock when I can, and the biggest negative, I think, for Amazon is that when we do finally enter a recession, or worse, they're going to be screaming for the heads of Amazon executives, because the company has achieved such pricing power that they're going to be perceived as a monopolist that has to be regulated. But of course, that's a whole sequence of things that happens. It's not something you would bet on right now by buying put options. So anyway, Google and Amazon, it's just hard to sell them short, literally.
I agree. They are the two standouts, I think, of the FANG stocks. But hey, to your point, there are some people looking in or at least trying to get that ball rolling for Amazon being more or less a monopoly. But that's a long road and a tough battle. But Rick, it's always great hearing from you. Thanks for taking some time this afternoon. I know everybody enjoys all that you have to say on the markets. And for all those people that want to follow along with Rick, click that link below this interview and at least subscribe for his free email blast, or even consider a subscription to his website. Rick, thanks again for your time today.
Thank you, Corey.